Did you notice it was a baseball motif today? Now, I know it's odd because it's a football day, right? Since 1991, God's team has not won. Yeah, so some of you have on the old Redskin jerseys, some the new Commanders, but you're still one team, correct? Okay, so you're playing the Eagles. It's going to be rough. Yeah, so those people from Philly, I don't know, they're tough. So I don't know, we'll pray for that, your team, yeah. But today, that's not till 3, right? 3 o'clock, all life stops for you. But for today, it's about baseball. Why? Well, because all of our other capital campaigns had to deal with baseball. And all of our other team concepts for the capital campaign around baseball took that motif because I like baseball. I grew up playing baseball. I lived in the desert of Southern California. We could play all year. You could, you know, play leagues and then train, you know, during the winter months because it wasn't really winter in the desert. And that's all I did is play ball. So we want to just tap into that with our going, going, gone motif, and we'll explain what that means to you in case you don't understand that phraseology. We'll talk about that in just a minute. But we want to review because baseball players sometimes forget what they were told by the coach. And maybe you weren't even here. How many were not even here back in 2014 when we even started it? See what I mean? Yeah, so a lot of you are new players to our team. So we do like the baseball motif. So we want to review and educate you with some new information in case you don't know. When we first, as we began to grow, because our church grew over the last 16 years, 281% numerically, which is astonishing. God has blessed us greatly. And with that, we grew spiritually, financially, and all other ways. And so when we were meeting in the gym and maxed out, at one point I was doing 5 services a Sunday. I don't ever want to do that again. I had a sore throat for 1 straight year because all I was doing was speaking time after time. I forgot what I was saying in sermons because it's like, did I talk about that? One guy came to every sermon because he said I modified him every service. He's truly spiritual. But anyway, back in 2014, we started the first giving program based on the motif of following God's lead. And we just, as we talked about it, that's exactly what we were doing. He grew the church. And so what are we supposed to do? Well, we're just following him where he leads. And where he led was building that huge worship center that you're now sitting in, where there used to be a soccer field, an elevated soccer field, and partially a forest. And so that's what we were doing. That particular series in 2014 and 2015 was followed by a 10-part series called Get in the Game. So if you're following God's lead as a team member on his team, going where he's leading you, and you find out what he wants you to do, then you got to get in the game. You got to play. And so in that 10-part series, I talked about discipleship. What is the disciple of Christ? And toward the end of that series, I talked about true disciples understand what giving and sacrifice means. And we'll talk about how well the team played here in just a minute and based on that. That was followed up in another 3-part series in 2016 called Batter Up. And so if you're on deck warming up and, you know, you got to get up to the plate. If you don't get up there, the umpire is going to say, batter up. And so you get up into the plate and you're up there to do what when you're in the plate? You're up there to hit. I mean, that is why you're not up there to strike out. You're not sit there to watch the balls go by. You're there to get into the plate, own the plate, and hit the ball. And so in that particular little chalk talk, I talked about the importance of hitting a pitch called sacrificial giving. Because there's all kinds of pitches in baseball, curveballs, sliders, I mean, all kinds of pitches. You have to learn how to hit those pitches. And so we taught you how to hit that particular pitch on sacrificial giving. And then we finished that up in 2017 with another motif called heading for home. As we had a lot of players on the bases, we were doing a lot of things in our giving program. And so I had another 2-part sermon titled Heading for Home because we wanted to score by raising the monies that we needed to build this wonderful worship center. And so I had 2 sermons, one on Moses challenging the Israelites to give toward the construction of the tabernacle. And they gave so much money in Exodus 35 and 36 that Moses had to tell them to stop bringing money to build God's worship center. It was an amazing story. And then I talked about David's life in Chronicles 28 and 29, 1 Chronicles, how David wasn't going to be able to build the temple to replace the tabernacle. So because of his position as a warrior in Israel, his son Solomon would build it. But God said, you know, you can invest in the future worship center. And he did. So He began to take his life and store away things for his son to use to build the mighty temple. So a strategic giver is what David was. And we were at the time, at the very beginning, the elders came to me and Darren Brown, our worship pastor, educational, or our executive pastor, and said, "We want you." We're debt free at the time when we did all this, and praise God for that. But he told us, they said, "We want you guys put together these programs to raise $9 million for a down payment on $17.9 million building." That's what this cost. And $9 million, really. And so we launched all these programs. When all was said and done, of the $17.9 million that we needed to build all these facilities, to house all the new people, we had raised right at $14 million, which is shocking. It's unbelievable. So the team got the idea of what a team member is about and gave. In fact, many of them still give to this program, which is why our debt load has been reduced dramatically. We took our loan out and of that the remaining monies, and God blessed us in that. So we took out a 30-year loan in 2020. It will be paid off in 2028 at our current rate. 30-year loan, 8 years. That just shows you the magnitude of the level of the sacrificial giving of our team members. So I commend you for that. But what we want to do is launch our final series on the baseball motif, because I can't think of any other names. But what's the most logical one? Well, going, going, gone. And really, what does that mean? How many are not familiar with that because you don't play baseball? Yeah, a couple? Okay, we'll pray for you. Should be in the Bible, but it's a good motif. 1929, Cincinnati Reds. They had an announcer named Harry Hartman. He came up with the particular phrase to denote a hitter hitting the ball over the fence. He borrowed it from the 1800s in the area. They had auction houses. And when an item would be sold, it was going, going, gone. That item was sold. So he's like a baseball player, announcer, and he's like, that could work well with a home run. And that's exactly what he did. Mel Allen, who called many of the games for the New York Yankees from 1940 to 1964, he used that term all the time. And so now we all know what this term means, right? Going, going, gone. And we're going to borrow it as they borrowed it to denote what our goal is. We have two goals. We've already mentioned them in the little brief trailer. Our goal is twofold. And by the way, at the end of January, it is our State of the Church address. If you're new to the church, so this is the next three Sundays are like our elongated State of the Church address, as it were, and so we're committed to this going, going, gone motif. So two things are our focus in this particular goal. Number one is paying off of our loan that's been paid down from 30 years down to 8 years, which is shocking, but we want to pay it off so we're debt free again. What does being debt free as a church do for you? It's amazing. I mean, you can hire, it's not an issue. You can give to the needy, you can give to the orphan, you can give to missions. You can do all kinds of things because you have no restraints with a debt hanging over you. And so we are looking at getting rid of that debt altogether. This is our 50th year as a church. What greater thing to do than to be debt-free again at the end of all of this? And we'll talk more about that benefits in just a minute in later in the series. The other thing is to expand the parking lot. To raise money to expand the parking lot. What will that do for you? No longer will your Christianity be challenged when you pull in the parking lot. I was going really good until I pulled in the parking lot, and then faith just went out the window because they cut in front of me. You know what I'm saying? You can pull in a parking lot because there will be 182 more parking spots. Now, this isn't perfect. That's 182 more people trying to exit after church. I didn't say it was perfect, but it's our next best option, and we've studied it. So the elders have already invested $300,000 for engineering cost, and this has been already presented to the county, and so this should be approved sometime this summer. So we're rocking and rolling with our going, going, gone motif. So we want to talk about going, going, gone. How in the world will we raise these additional monies while we're still, as a church, as a team, continuing to give toward the annual budget? So this is giving above and beyond what you will normally give to the Lord. This isn't, well, I'll just give my normal gifts to the Lord and slide them over to the building fund. This is not what that's about. This is giving sacrificially above what you sacrificially give. How are you going to do that? So I call this, how do you hit a financial home run in your giving to God. How do you do that? If you are a physical hitter on a baseball team, you study how to hit. I mean, that is what you do. That's what I always used to do. You study how to hit a ball, and you study how to hit a ball out of the park. I mean, that's the goal. You want to be able to be a great hitter. So how many baseball players in the church? Any youngsters that are still playing ball? No one. We need to pray for our church. If you want to increase your ability to hit the ball and hit the ball well, I'll give you a couple just physical ideas to think about as a player. Number one, you have to work on bat speed. So a lot of you ask me, because you complain, like, why do you have such a strong grip? Because I do. Well, it's bat speed. Stronger the forearms, more powerful the legs, you can drive the ball. And so I always, back in the day before we had hand grips and everything that I've used over the years, we used a bucket of cement tied to a rope, tied to a stick. So at the end of the bench, you just rolled this thing, is it before electricity, things like that. You just rolled this bucket of cement up and down, up and down. You would flip it over and roll it up and down. So there's always guys down at the end of the bench working on their forearms during the game. So bat speed, critical. To hit the ball well, it helps you to lean a little bit over the plate and put your bat a little bit forward so you can jump on the pitch. The other thing is you don't want to hit the first pitch. Typically, you want to like pick your pitch. And so take your time. Wait for something good to come in. Work on hitting curveballs. Why? Because if you can hit a curveball, based on the spin of a curveball, you get more lift if you hit a curveball to get it out of the ballpark. It's harder to drive a fastball out of the ballpark. If you were on the on-deck circle warming up, we used to use the, I don't even know if they make anymore, they were giant fins, and you would slide them onto your bat, and it created wind resistance as you would swing. We used to use those. I don't think they have them anymore. Then we went to the donuts made out of lead. We went to the donuts. The more studly you were, the more donuts you had on your bat. But since they've learned, studied it scientifically, you don't want to put a lot of weight on a bat when you're warming up. A lighter bat when you're swinging it increases bat speed. And so you just learn things about hitting a ball physically. Same thing applies spiritually. See, what we want to do is take a physical hitting motifs and apply it to spiritual. So our team owner, his name, Jesus is the owner of, excellent. You know this, correct? The owner of our team is Christ. And he preached a message in Matthew 5 through 7. It is typically called the Sermon on the Mount, spoken on the north shore of the Sea of Galilee. For our purposes today, to stay with the motif, it's not the Sermon on the Mount, it's the Sermon on the Mound. Are you with me? Does that work for you? Works for me. Too late to change now. So I just want to share with you one, and I'm going to do this for the next three Sundays. I call them, because if you're hitting, you want to hit a long ball. That's what you want to do. Either, you know, bounce it off the center field fence, but you want to hit a long ball in the gaps where they can't get to it, or hit it out of the park. So we want to talk about long ball tips, spiritually speaking, when it comes to giving. What does that look like? So we're going to focus on one today. It's called get the right perspective when you're hitting. When I was growing up, I mean, I knew how to hit. I think when I was the youngest kid to make Little League All-Stars when I was 11. That had never happened. I think that year I batted 410, which is, if you know baseball stats, that's not bad. And so they put me on the All-Star team. I knew how to hit. I just wasn't a home run hitter. When I was in high school one year, I was playing Babe Ruth ball, and my coach was Lefty Martin, Alvin Martin. My dad had coached him when he was a little boy in Little League. And when he was a grown man after the Vietnam War, he was a Green Beret. He played for the California Angels. Then he got drafted and ended up a Green Beret. There went his baseball career. But after Vietnam, he became my coach that one summer. I was on a black baseball team. Me and the brothers. And I grew up with these guys. I knew them all, their dads. We all hung together. There were 18 guys on the team, two white guys, and that was it. I played center field between two black guys, so they nicknamed me Oreo Cookie. That's what they called me. I was like, thank you very much. My one friend that pitched for us all through high school, he still lives in California. He contacts me every morning at 3:30 their time, a.m., and sends me a note about what God's doing in his life that day. Amazing. So I know these guys well. I was playing in a game, and Lefty knew that he was huge. I mean, this guy was cut. I mean, he had like 20-inch arms, 30-inch waist. He was scary. He would scare you into hitting. And his whole thing was, when you step into the plate, you own the plate. You make the pitcher afraid to even wind up and throw the ball at you. And so I got in a game, and the pitcher was a tough pitcher. And I was warming up, and Luffy came to me out of the dugout, and he put his hand on my shoulder, and he said, "Hey, I tell you what, I want you to hit the first pitch as a left-hander over the right field fence." I'm like, "Lefty, I don't hit home runs." "No, you can do it. First pitch, this guy usually throws a fastball. Just jump on it. Just hit it over the fence." Oh, okay. And so I got up there. First pitch was a fastball. What did I do? I jumped all over that thing, and it went right out of the ballpark. I remember my dad standing there in his U.S. custom uniform at the top of the bench, or the bleachers, standing there in that blue uniform that they wore with his badge and everything. He was standing there like this. Just, "That's my son." I saw him when I ran to second base. He was so proud because I didn't hit home runs. But I had a different perspective with the coach like this, because what'd he tell me? "I mean, you can hit doubles and triples, but I think you can hit it out of the ballpark." So if you look at your life as a person who gives to God, think about the perspective. What is my perspective? Is it earthly or is it heavenly when I give? So listen to what our coach said in the Sermon on the Mount. What did he say? Matthew 6. "Don't lay up for yourselves treasures on earth." Don't do that. Why? "Well, moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal. On the contrary," he says, "but lay up for yourselves treasures where? In heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves don't break in and steal." And then he says, you know, where your treasure is, now you can find your heart there. Then he says, "The lamp of the body is the eye. If therefore your eye is clear, your whole body is full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body is going to be full of darkness. If therefore the light that is in you is darkness, how great is that darkness?" And then he says, when he's talking about what he's entrusted to us, "No man can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he'll hold to the one and despise the other." And Jesus says, you cannot serve God and mammon or money. So we know in this passage, the Sermon on the Mount, that Jesus is talking about money because he's using the word treasure, which talks about money. And also in Matthew 6, 1-4, in the context, he's speaking about giving money and financial assistance to the poor. So he's talking about money. In fact, he's going to give you great instruction on how to use the things as he's entrusted to you. Because whatever you have that he has entrusted to you, you should be investing in heavenly things. That's what he's going to talk about. The second thing from our team owner, he says, in life, there are two treasuries. There's an earthly treasury and there's a heavenly treasury. And you make deposits into both of them. And so do you understand that whatever you do in his name here in your giving, be what it may, is a deposit in a heavenly treasury as opposed to just a physical treasury. Number three, he commands us not to overly focus on earthly treasure, but to focus most of our time on heavenly treasure. Well, he does not besmirch you having a financial plan. I do. I've had one for years to make sure I can retire one day, take care of my wife if I pass away, etc. I mean, it's not wrong to be wise and to plan ahead. Remember when Joseph in the Old Testament knew that a famine was coming? What'd he do? He saved to help him and help the people. So a wise person saves. In Proverbs chapter 3, verses 6-8, the writer tells us that if you really want to learn how to live your life in an intelligent, wise way, go watch ants and study them well. Because what do? Well, they know how to plan ahead. They're storing food all the time. I don't know if they're making them anymore. We used to buy them as a kid, those ant farms. And those used to miss them. I mean, just how busy they are to storing up food. So there's nothing wrong with storing up to take care of your needs. What he's against is believers storing up so much that you're not going to ever be able to use it. We're going to talk about this. When you take, because we have to have a, I know it's baseball, but we need to talk about Greek grammar for just a minute. Don't we? All players are good at grammar in our church. So he says, don't lay up for yourselves treasures. And then he says, but do lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven. So don't worry about the earth, worry about heaven. So if you take a negative in Greek and you wed it to a present tense imperative, you're forbidding an action in progress. So what's that mean? That means the disciples that he's speaking to on the Sermon on the Mount are guilty of what he's talking about. They are worldly. They're thinking about the earth. They're not thinking about heaven. The other thing that he says here is don't lay up yourselves treasures. It's a play on words, as it were. The word that he uses here, thesaurisete, is a word for thesaurus. Do you have one of these? Are you in college? This is mine from college. It's old. This is probably a collector's item now. I lived with this thing. In fact, I still use this thing. Because the worst thing in writing is to use the same word in a paragraph over and over. And they'll just circle that. You keep saying the same word. You can't use the word juxtapose every other sentence. And what does that word mean anyway? So you use a thesaurus to do what? Find another word. Now, you will know that there are words in here that you're like, I never use that word, right? Like juxtapose. Do you use that word? No, you don't use that word. But it's a word that would be in here. And so this word has more words than you can possibly use in a lifetime. That's the word that Jesus uses. The thesaurus is the word in Greek for thesaurus. It means to store up more than you possibly need. And so Jesus' words take on a great significance of overly planning while you're not making deposits in heavenly treasure. John MacArthur, I studied his church when I was a senior at Azusa Pacific University. Took a team over there to study his church on how to build a church, how to run a church. Here's what he writes about this passage. He says, the Greek word thesaurisete, from which we get the word thesaurus, is a treasury of words. Boy, is it. More words than you could possibly use. He says, but thesaurisete is a play on words that means treasure, not treasure. In other words, don't stockpile. The idea of the word of treasure is to stash something somewhere. He says the peculiar quality of this Greek word literally conveys the idea of placing something horizontally, like you're stacking coins. He says the Lord is not referring to that which we use to live every day, but that which we just pile up. He says it's not our necessities, like meeting the needs of our own life, the family, the poor, etc. But he says this is about having so much money is that there's no way you can actually tap into those. I had a man at my last church who told me one day, he said, I can spend $1,000 a day and never touch my principal. Whoa. I told him, I can take my wife out for a Coke and I just spent my interest. You know, he just laughed at me. But, he had planned well, but he had more than enough and he did advance the kingdom with it. He had a kingdom concept, but it's stockpiling. So God is not against you creating an investment plan for your life. That's just wise, correct? That's just wise. Abraham was a wealthy man, and he was called a friend of God. He was very wealthy. God made him wealthy, and he planned ahead, but he also blessed those around him. Job, when he repented after God took everything away from him, I hate to tell you the end of the book, but when you get to the end of the book, what happens? God gives him like super abundance of all the things that he had because he was a godly man. So don't think that I'm talking about not having a plan. It's just hoarding and not using that to advance God's purposes. Dr. Thomas Constable, great teacher at Dallas Seminary back in the day, writes this about this concept. He says, the view of the imminence of the kingdom, Jesus' disciples should stop laying up treasures on the earth. He says, Jesus called for a break with their former practice. Money is not intrinsically evil. The wise person works hard and makes financial provisions for lean times. Believers have a responsibility to provide for their needy relatives, according to 1 Timothy 5:8. We can enjoy what God has given to us, according to 1 Timothy 4:3-4. What Jesus forbade was selfishness. Misers hoard more than they need. Materialists always want more. It's the love of money that's the root of all kinds of evil. Do you love money or do you love God? Jesus is saying, don't stockpile more than you need. And the reason why he says is an earthly thing. It's temporal. Those things they're only here for a time. So if you go buy a really nice car, your dream car, what's going to happen to it as it's exposed to the elements of living in Northern Virginia? In fact, I had a guy down the street from me, bought a brand new Corvette, and I hardly ever saw it. Why? Because he knew if he brought it outside, salt, door dings, all those things that happen to you from the devil. You know what I'm saying? The law is going to become, you're going to get rust. Like, why is there a rust spot? Because maybe they're, because it happened on one of my cars. When they finished your brand new car off, they didn't quite smooth it out, and there was like a little bump there. So you're waxing your carbon and you feel it, so you just kind of pick it with your fingernail. It's a hole. And then rust forms. And you're thinking, this is my brand new car. And the Lord's like, yes, it's an earthly treasure. It's going to wind up in some dump somewhere, right? Yeah. I mean, so all that stuff that you buy, purses, cars, shoes. Well, I can't talk about that. I get a lot of ladies mad at me, but shoes, all the stuff that you invest in. I mean, all those things become worthless in time, do they not? My mom's brother, my uncle Ray, he was a captain in the Air Force during the Vietnam War, and he flew for Strategic Air Command. He knew I had a little American U.S. Coin collection, and so he wanted to expand my horizon. So when he would fly to Vietnam, Thailand for the Air Force, he would bring me back money from all those countries, Germany, Deutschmarks, English pounds, wherever he was. So I have a big box of bills at my house that are worthless. I know they're worthless because when I went to Germany a couple years ago, they're on the euro system. But I have a Deutschmark. No, not here. I could go to London and try out my English pounds. Worthless here. Unbelievable. And if you think about that, I have this box full of money that's not worth anything because they changed the currency. You know, there's a different currency in heaven. Did you know this? Heavenly treasure. And so all that stuff that you got, you might be using it right now for the time being, but the time's going to come when you're going to look at that and go, it ain't worth anything. It's not worth anything. So are you planning on heavenly treasure? So what are you doing with your monies that God has entrusted to you? Where are you investing them? The motif is very simple, according to Christ. When you do spiritual things with the monies that he's entrusted to you, you make deposits in a heavenly account that one day he gives to you and blesses you with it. And we'll talk more about this next week. Because if you don't think he rewards you, then you have not read the New Testament. He loves you and he will reward you for how sacrificial you live and how well you plan for eternity. So right now, we are living in the preface of our lives. It's just the preface of our lives, but the future is coming when he will bless you in eternity with how you've invested into his kingdom. How much blessing will you see? Because really what you want to hear from him in Matthew 25 is the famous statement, well done, my good and faithful servant. For me, that will be enough, but he's going to bless you beyond that. The fourth thing that you learn is your treasury shows you where your heart is. So if you want to look at your life and go, am I really a deep, maturing believer? How do I know that? Well, I know based on what I support with the money that he entrusted to me. I can tell where my heart is by looking at my checkbook. Do I support the widow, the orphan? Do I support my church? Do I give to missions? Do I give to a mission? What do I do with what he's entrusted to me that tells you where your heart is according to Christ? The fifth thing, he says, just as there are two treasuries in life, there are two eyes, like eyes. You either have good eyes or you have bad eyes. I have bad eyes, physically speaking. Vision's 2800. That's bad. So if I were batting with my glasses off, you could throw a basketball at me and I couldn't hit it. Okay, so I have bad eyes. But there's good eyes and there's bad eyes. Bad eyes, the person full of darkness, doesn't understand that there's heavenly realities that you're investing in. Good eyes is the person who understands what I give to the advancement of God's kingdom, makes spiritual deposits one day, and he sees that. He understands that. At my last church was a little old lady. And she was sweet as the day is long. She was from Florida. She had that cute little accent. I did her husband's funeral when he passed away. They owned a national trucking company. They lived in a tract home. And so when we were growing as a church and moved into our first building of the grocery store that we purchased, we were wanting to pay off the loan that we had. And it was not like our loan here. It was a much smaller church. And it was called Twin Oaks. It was the name of our church. So we had big oak trees made out of oak wood. We stood them up on a table. And we put acorns all over it with denominations that people in the church could pull off and say, I'm going to give this to God to pay off the entire amount. And I think what was on there back, this was a long time ago. I think what was left on the account was like $25,000 to pay off the loan. And so we made this big tree, lots of effort, stained it and everything, made all the acorns, put them all on there. And she came in my office one day when I just put the tree out in the sanctuary. She came in my office with it. And I said, what are you doing? We just put that out there. I know. Well, we just put that out there for Sunday for people. I know. And I go, well, what are you doing? She goes, well, I'm going to Florida. And when I come back, I just want to let you know I'm paying for all these acorns. She paid for every acorn on there. Yeah, that little retired lady owned 8,000 acres around Disney World. Yeah, yeah. Lived in a tract home. And she made investments into heavenly kingdoms concepts, did she not? She said, no, taking care of my church, meeting the needs of my church and others is what she was about. It wasn't about her life, fancy cars, fancy this. Lived a simple life and gave to God. What a great, she's still alive today. Great, great woman of God. The last thing I'll leave you with, there's two treasuries, one earthly, one heavenly. There's two forms of eyesight. Bad eyesight doesn't give to heavenly things. Good eyesight does. And then lastly, he says you have two masters. It's either God or money. And it's one or the other. And Jesus said, you either serve one or you serve the other one. So the question is, who do I serve? Well, how can I tell who I really serve? Well, by how much I give to his kingdom's work. We have a great church. You've been great ever since I've been here in giving. Off the charts. That's why our loan is almost paid off. And as we face these new challenges between the parking lot and the final debt, I have full faith in you that you understand what it means to put God first in your life and not mammon. But hitting technique to hit a long ball is to understand that premise that as I give to God, that makes a deposit in a heavenly sphere that one day my Lord will give me and give you and bless you with it. And you get to enjoy that investment, not for a year, not for 20 years. I mean, think 30 million years, 100 million years, eternity. Amen. What I'm going to do is introduce you by video to one of our elders, Dave Hadway, a godly man who understands giving, and close with his witness about giving.
I'm Dave Hadway. I have been coming to Burke Community Church since we moved here in 2008. At the invitation of our daughter, who was invited to join youth group, we started getting involved at that point. I was involved as a participant in men's ministry, eventually became the leader of men's ministry for a few years, and after which I became a member of the elder council for 3 years, after which I became a member of staff and did that for a couple of years. When the new sanctuary that we sit in on Sundays now was under development, it was an all-church activity. If you weren't here, you might have missed the opportunity to be going through the woods that were there at the time and praying through, this is the site where we believe that our future church building is going to be. But it turns out that the members of this church, when they first got the land, had put in place the seeds for future construction nearly 50 years ago. As we approached the 50-year anniversary of our church, it was astounding to me that they had that kind of foresight, that kind of faith to step out and say, no, we want to plan this area for the future of what God would have to do. At our congregational meeting this past November, a budget was proposed, and it was mentioned that we have $2.6 million remaining on our mortgage to where we could be free and clear and the bank would not own this building with us. The thought occurs to me that if we didn't make big payments to a bank every month, what would God have us do with these big payments? What does that mean for our ability to continue to impact the community around us? What is that 50-year vision that he's putting on your heart and my heart now so that this church can set a vision now for what happens 50 more years into the future, as the church did for us 50 years ago? I spoke at that meeting in favor of this budget, but I also wanted to encourage everybody who is a part of this to be part of the 2,000 people that if they gave $25 a week for 1 year would add up to enough to end that mortgage. And so the people of God in this place would own this place outright, and we wouldn't have to share the ownership of this place with anybody else. Not a bank, not anybody else, just the people of God in this place. To me, it seems the time is now, right now, for us to make a decision. We're at a point in time where we should pivot, casting a vision for where the Lord is going to take us into the future.
That is a godly man, and he's challenged me many times and challenges you, I'm sure. You have a, when you came in, you should see a giving card to be basically looking at that and praying about that. God, what would you want me to do? And giving toward this program over the next 2 years. And then we'll have a time to collect those on our third series. And so it's time to worship the Lord, is it not? So all players should stand. And players at our church sing, so enjoy.